Join us this week as we descend into the darker side of human nature and uncover the shadows that dwell in the unknown. From chilling true crime and gruesome murders to spine-tingling paranormal encounters that defy explanation, we're peeling back the curtain on things that go bump in the night. So grab a flashlight and maybe a blanket, because you're listening to The Guilty and the Ghostly.
Hi, and welcome back to the Guilty and the Ghostly.
I wonder if he plugged the mic in, too. Did you plug the mic in, or is that your computer mic?
No, I plugged the mic in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're not glitching. We can hear you. You
yeah,
sound good.
Yeah, sounds a lot better.
Yeah, much better. You had to have your spooky vibes, too?
I'm trying.
Well, good, because I got a spooky case tonight.
Well, I'm excited to hear it after all this effort I put in.
That was a lot of work. There's better work. Well, we haven't done a whole hell of a lot. Like I said, we've been working. You said Hadley's walking now.
Yes. She's growing like a tumbleweed.
Yeah. Well, I don't really have any business. Our numbers have grown a lot this week.
Yep.
They've kind of skyrocketed, but what's funny is we just released a two-parter, but we have more listens on the second part than we do the first part, which is kind of funny, but...
Well, it's probably new people checking out the channel and just kind of seeing what the latest...
Seeing what it sounded like and what it was. Yeah. So if you're listening to this and you haven't heard the first part, go back and listen to the first part of... The Torso Killer, Richard Cunningham. It's a good one. There was a lot of side quests, a lot of things that kind of interlinked in both episodes. So you'll miss out on some of those if you don't listen to both of them. So go check them out. We brought Seth back today. He's been MIA for a little while. We've been busy, but hopefully with this new setup, we got him his own microphone. Hopefully it'll work out. Maybe he can join in a little bit more.
Yeah. It makes it a lot easier on everybody when you don't have to travel.
Yeah. So welcome back.
Yeah, that's the biggest the fret right there is the 30, 40 minute drive.
For sure. Yeah. So hopefully this makes it easier on everybody. Tori was here when did we record? I guess it was Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
We recorded Saturday. She was here because her and AD came over because of the storm. Her lazy self was sleeping on the couch, and I went and woke her up and was like, hey, let's go record. She's like, no, it's cold in there. I'm sleeping. So she was here and couldn't even walk to the laundry room.
She probably fell asleep during the day. Those are good things to pick up.
Very true. Those are facts. Straight facts.
It had been like talking to a corpse.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Although Josh didn't say much that episode either, so I felt like I was talking to myself.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, today we are doing a spooky episode. I've been trying to do 1 week true crime, 1 week spooky, and then the third week I've been trying to do like a dark history or kind of fun, kind of different episode. So this week it falls on spooky.
Yep.
Josh hadn't heard of it, I don't think, but have you heard of the Bobby Mackey's Music Hall?
No, I have not.
You have not. Okay. Well, get ready for me to just blow your mind. So this one in the beginning has a lot of crazy true crime happening. I didn't realize or did not remember this. from the other podcast that I've listened to. And so when I was researching it, I was like, oh, this will be lighthearted and fun since we just covered such a heavy case the last 2 weeks. Like, I needed something that was more light. And then I get to researching and it's like murder, mm-hmm. murder, murder again. I was like, oh my gosh. But it's still kind of still light, still fun. So we'll kind of get through the heavy stuff and then we'll move on.
All right.
Okay, Mr. Fidgets. Are you ready now?
All right, and we're back.
Yeah, we'll start talking and then Seth will just disappear off the screen. Then he'll just pop back up and be like, hey, I'm back. Yep. It happens. It happens. All right. So what I was saying was I did not remember that much murder in this one until I started researching it. It's known as one of the most haunted locations in America. It has demons. It has the portal to hell. It's got murder. And I will go into it at the end. There was like one source that I found. It's got hemorrhoids too.
Oh my God.
So get ready for this wild ride.
Wow.
So we are going to be in Wilder, Kentucky. In the mid-1800s, Wilder was a working-class community built around the Licking River.
Wow.
Well, yeah, Licking River.
Hemorrhoids and licking.
Hemorrhoids and licking.
What a good thing to have.
What a great start.
Jeez, Audrey.
It served as a transportation hub for livestock, goods, and raw materials. Farming and cattle trade dominated the local economy, and slaughterhouses were necessary in that area in that time. The facility was built in 1850 on what would later become the site of Bobby Mackey's Music Hall. And in that area, it was one of the largest ones of the time. So it was a huge slaughter and meatpacking facility, basically. Mm-hmm. The slaughterhouse had a...
like everything.
What do you mean everything?
The slaughterhouse, like a pig, like pigs, cattle.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. Like a farm, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. It had a like well in the basement. Some people call it a well. Some kind of argue it's not really like an actual well. It's basically a drain that goes directly into the Licking River. Because it's right next to that river. And in that well, it was used to dispose of all the waste from the animals, their blood, their guts, all the insides would go into that well and directly into the river.
Yeah, we're just giving it right back to the land.
That's right. That's right. Well, during this time, of course, no one's really concerned about the effect of pouring rotting meat and blood directly into the river. They're just like, nah, that's tomorrow's problem. I ain't worried about it.
Well, you know, on a small scale, it's probably not that big of a deal. But whenever you're running an industrial meatpacking place, it
how much it is going through? Yeah, and it's going downstream, so it's, you know, mm-hmm. It could have a bigger effect. Let's see. However, in the late 1800s, flooding, changing regulations, and shifts toward railroad transport rather than by the river and boats, it kind of affected the area and the slaughterhouse and how they're transporting everything.
Yeah.
So the facility would end up being shut down, and the building and the well were all left intact. They shut it down, but everything was still there. Well, in the 1890s, with it being an abandoned building, there was a satanic cult known to be in the area, which, you know, satanic panic, but we're still in the 1800s, 1890. I didn't realize that was really a thing back then.
Oh, yeah.
With the slaughterhouse being, oh, nope, read that. Just kidding. Since it was known that the blood and guts were already disposed, you know, in that well, the cult decided, perfect spot for our rituals. Mm-hmm. Let's use it. So they were known to use animals in their sacrifices. But it is also believed that they sacrificed humans. And to make it worse, it was known that they would commonly use intellectually disabled children in their rituals.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sad.
That is sad. And basically it was said that the thought behind this was, and this is not me saying it, this is what they were saying. The thought was that basically they would be less likely missed, and that they were sending the children back down to the devil.
Wow.
Yeah. Starting off rough.
So they were trying to purify.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, the well would become known as a porter. It's not a porter.
A porter potty.
It would be known as a portal to hell. So that was going on. And then in 1896, there was a 22-year-old girl named Pearl Bryan. She was a young woman who lived in Greencastle, Indiana. She grew up in a very religious family and community. So when she found out she was pregnant by her secret boyfriend, William Wood, the son of a local Methodist minister, it was not great. And William would try to convince her to have an abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a couple of different theories on this, but basically, let me kind of tell you what I have, and then I'll kind of tell you what other theories were too. So William had this friend named Scott. There was one that was Scott Jackson. They also said it was Alonzo, and I'll talk about Alonzo here in a minute. But two of them were dental students. And William thought, hey, maybe Scott would help me do this abortion on his own girlfriend. From what I understand, the girlfriend, some of them said that she didn't want the abortion. And so some reports say they basically slipped her cocaine to, like, knock her out. But I would think that would, doesn't cocaine do the opposite? Doesn't it hype you up?
I guess it depends.
Are you a cocaine maybe user? Do what? You say
Novocaine?
Yeah, maybe. All of them said cocaine. So they gave her cocaine. Some of it said it was to see if that would induce the abortion. Some said they slipped that to her basically to knock her out so that they could do the abortion. So either way, it's not good. Well, then they started trying to do the abortion, and it basically went wrong. And they freaked out. And so they basically kidnapped her and severed her head with dental tools, left her body in a field right by this slaughterhouse that is closed, and her head was never found.
That's fucking crazy.
And it's believed that either William or said friend was a member of the cult that practiced at the slaughterhouse.
Wow.
Hopefully it wasn't the dentist.
I think it was. It was a devil dentist.
Mm-hmm.
She was thought to be about 5 months pregnant. When they found Pearl, they were only able to identify her by the shoes that she was wearing, because the town that she lived in was so small that it had like a serial number. I don't know if it was an actual serial number, but some kind of stamp that they were able to track it down to the shop that sold them, and they were able to track it down to who they sold them to.
Yeah.
And so that's how they were able to identify Pearl. Well, both guys, I guess, continued to say it wasn't us, we didn't do it, but there was a lot of evidence saying that they did. I seen one source where they found hair in one of their rooms in like a bag or a suitcase. but they would never say where her head went. A lot of people wonder, were they doing the abortion because they didn't, you know, like I said, it's a religious community, it's a bad look, it's the 1800s, or were they trying to take, this is bad, but were they trying to take the fetus as a sacrifice?
That's a good question.
And where did her head go? Was the head used as a sacrifice?
I mean, there's a lot of times in those type of rituals where the human head is the actual focal point.
Yeah.
So it's highly possible.
Either way, it's not good.
Like the heart, that I'm a cultist specialist or anything.
Yeah. Where did it go? I am like shivering because I'm so cold.
It's not that cold in here.
Okay, so they would go to trial for the murder and they would be hung. And supposedly, while they were being hung, they said, we will basically curse this land and haunt it forever and yada, yada, yada. And from what I read, it wasn't a quick hanging. And they hung them at the same time. And I guess they didn't do the rope quite right, so it did not go like it should, and it was a very long, painful death.
So instead of it breaking their neck, they choked to death.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So we're starting off strong.
Yep.
Really strong here.
A lot of violent stuff going on around this place.
That's just the beginning of it. But that was the last public hanging of Campbell County. So there's that.
Probably for good reason.
Yeah, after watching somebody, a failed execution. Or
let's try to end on the most high note we possibly can.
Yeah. They're like, Steve did not do a good job. I don't think he's getting too old. He doesn't know what he's doing. Let's just go ahead and stop.
somebody got fired.
Yeah.
They didn't do the PM on the gallows very well.
No kidding. Well, the slaughterhouse would remain abandoned until the 1920s. It would be torn down, leaving only the basement from the original structure. Over the basement, they would build a speakeasy and casino. A gentleman by the name of Buck Brady would then purchase the building in 1933, and he renamed it Primrose. He was doing really good for himself. I think he owned it for like 10-something years, and it was so successful that the local mob was seeing him forking in all this cash, just raking it in. And so they're like, we want a piece of it. And he's like, no, I did this. I built it with my hands. I'm not doing it. And they kept...
They're just there to offer him protection from themselves.
Well, exactly.
Pay me or I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what happened. They kept pressuring him. They kept like going into the establishment and like bothering his customers. Mm-hmm. And finally, Buck had enough. He's like, I am sick and tired of this. And one of the mobsters, Red Masterson, walked in and Buck drew a gun on him, shot him. He went to trial and they ended up throwing it out. I'm guessing the mob was like, we don't need to go to trial. Mm-hmm. We'll take care of it. Don't worry. So it got thrown out. Well, Buck would eventually hand over the business to the mobsters. He's like, I've had enough. I'm done. And from what I read, basically the mobster said, if you don't, we will kill you. Mm-hmm. And so he really didn't have an option. I also seen another source that said that once Buck sold it, I've seen two different stories. One said he ended up moving to Florida and he ended up completing suicide. Another one said he was found by the well of this place and he completed suicide. So
I think you're saying that wrong.
It's more politically correct to say completed rather than committed. Committed is seen as a crime. It's not really a crime if you're doing it. Okay. You know what I mean?
All right.
PC.
I mean, I guess I don't know what an incomplete suicide would look like.
Failed. How fatal. Completely. Yeah. So that's what happened to Buck. And so once Buck sold the Primrose and the mobsters took took it over in the 1950s, they renamed it the Latin Quarter. And the owner actually had a daughter, and her name, there's a couple of different reports. Most of them say Johanna. And I'll talk more about her in just a minute. But I was watching BuzzFeed Investigates. Some people hate them. I think they're hilarious. They actually did some digging in actual files. Mm-hmm. They could not find a Johanna, but could find a Joanna. And I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but she was killed the same way that Johanna's story is led. So Johanna, Joanna, one of the two. She was a dancer at the bar, and she would end up falling in love with a man named Robert Randall. He was a performer there. Well, of course, her mobster dad was like, they were planning on running off, starting their life. Her mobster dad's like, no, no way. I'm not having it. You're not leaving with him. I'll have him killed. He ends up killing Robert Randall.
Mm. So, I said, get the fuck out of here.
Well, Johanna was not happy. So she's like, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. And she poisoned her dad.
Oh, wow.
He survives. But the same day that she poisoned her dad, she ended up killing herself in the dressing room at this establishment. So Johanna has now died there.
And jeez.
A lot of history.
Lots of blood spilled in that place.
Well, which I think I say it on down, it was known here in a minute, it's going to be bought and more stuff's going to happen, but it got the nickname the Blood Bucket.
Yeah, it fits.
Fits, yeah. Well, when they did the autopsy, supposedly, on Johanna, she was also 5 months pregnant.
Interesting.
Yeah. She wrote a love poem on the wall and everything for her boyfriend, lover, whatever you want to call him, when she took her life.
Wow.
So very similar to Pearl, 5 months pregnant. And we'll get, that comes up again. There's a lot of things that there's a lot of coincidences where it's just kind of like, that's weird. That's a little weird. In 1961, the police were starting to crack down on crime. They knew it was a huge gambling establishment, and a lot of the townsfolk that weren't part of that life were like, are you going to do something about this? Are you going to shut it down? So the police went in one night, confiscated all of their stuff, and basically evicted them, made them shut it down. So after that happened and the closing of Latin Quarter, several other people would come in and open it up and try to run a business, but it would always end up getting shut down until the Hard Rock Cafe opened up. And it's not any association to the Hard Rock Cafe. It just happens to have the same name. And it was a rock and roll biker bar. A huge, rough crowd would go there. Rough crowd. Then they would have...
Sounds like they need Patrick Swayze.
I don't get the reference.
Roadhouse, bro.
I don't know if I've seen that.
Are you kidding me?
What's Roadhouse?
He goes to this bar out in the middle of nowhere and he's a bouncer.
I don't think I've ever seen
Girl.
That. Have you seen Roadhouse?
I've only seen like the Family Guy clips.
All right, I guess we have a movie night.
Sounds like it. We're going to have to watch the old one and the new one because the
I've heard of the new one.
Really good.
Yeah, I've heard, but I've seen bits and pieces of that one.
Yeah, I watched it here not too long ago.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. Well, never mind. We're going to cut that joke out.
No, we'll keep it. Well, it would open up as a Hard Rock Cafe. Drew in this huge, rough crowd. They would have shootouts in the parking lots, fights in the bar, and many, many deaths in the bar, in the parking lot. So then you have all that blood being spilled. Finally, in 1978, they're selling it again. And this time, Bobby Mackey, a country singer, wanted to purchase the building and turn it into a like club, piano bar. He was a huge country singer, and he kind of wanted a place to where he could settle down. He could still perform when he wanted to, but not have to travel like he was doing, because he'd been on the road for about 12 years touring, and his wife was pregnant. They were starting a family, and he just kind of, he wanted to settle down. So
him, I can get that.
Yeah, I get it. So him and his wife decided to go look at the building. I believe his wife's name was Janet. And from the get-go, Bobby Mackey, he's like, nothing seems out of whack, seems completely normal. I don't get a bad feeling. But as soon as his wife stepped out of the car, she started experiencing things. She said that when she opened her door and like looked at the building, she saw a figure moving in the doorway, and she kind of like did a double take. And when she looked back, the door would shut by itself. And she's like, okay, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that is crazy.
And nobody's supposed to be there. It's just them looking around to see if they want to purchase it.
I've had experiences like that too, that just, you can't explain. And it really freaks you out.
Yeah, it just makes you wonder, like, what was that?
What the hell was that?
Yeah. Am I crazy? Did I really see something? Yeah. She also mentioned it to Bobby, and he was just like, kind of like you said, like, you're crazy. Like, let's just go inside and look. You're crazy. And so they went inside. She said it's like dimly lit. It kind of had an eerie feeling because all the tables and chairs were still set up like it was a running business, but nobody's in there. And that is kind of creepy, even just a normal place where it's supposed to be like, I guess, full of life and people there doing stuff. And then you're there after hours when it's completely quiet and the tables are set up, and it's kind of just gives that weird feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had that. So they're kind of walking around, they're looking, and then she said all of a sudden she heard what she thought was a man and a woman having an argument in the kitchen. So she's like, nobody's supposed to be here. So she walks to the kitchen, nobody's there. So immediately she's like, okay, something's weird. This is weird. And she's having second thoughts. She's like, are you sure you want to purchase this building? Like,
I would have had second thoughts. As soon as somebody started talking, I would have went the other way.
Like, look, we've got all these murders, satanic cult, and you walk in and you're hearing voices.
Yeah.
That should be your first sign. Mm-hmm. Let's go. I'm not doing it.
But I don't know.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think they knew about the history of the building going into the purchase?
Oh, yeah. It was very well known.
So maybe that kind of edged her fear of paranormal in the building.
It very well could have.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
What's funny is throughout this entire story, again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Bobby Mackey doesn't believe in the paranormal. He's like, it's BS. You're seeing things. There's another explanation. He's like, I don't believe any of it. And to this day, he still does not believe it's haunted. Yeah. So take that for what you will. Well, she's like, are you sure? Are you sure this is it? But she's like, I could see it in his eyes. It was almost like it was calling to him. Like, this was his place. This is what he wanted. This is what he needs. There's no talking him out of it. So we're just going to pull our big girl pants on and party with a ghost. We're just going to do it. They end up purchasing the building. Well, a few weeks later, her and Bobby Mackey, they're, you know, in there cleaning things up, trying to get things ready to open. And all of a sudden, Janet sees someone standing in the front doorway. And it startles her. She's like, oh, my God. And then she kind of calls for Bobby, like, are you seeing this? And he comes around the corner and he walks over there. And it actually was a person standing in the doorway. It wasn't a ghost. But this person, his name was Carl Lawson. He told Bobby Mackey, like, I used to work here when it was, what was the last one? I think the Hard Rock Cafe. I worked here when it was a Hard Rock Cafe. I worked here for years. I know the ins and outs. I know the history of the building. Like, if you have any questions, I'm the person to go to. I'm kind of in between jobs since they've closed it. So if you need anything, just holler. Well, with Janet being pregnant, he's like, well, that's kind of perfect because you already know everything about the building. So why don't I hire you to come in and help us get things ready and open this up? Sounds great. Awesome. He starts working for him. But here's the weird thing. He's like, you know, I'll just come by, introduce myself. He starts talking to Janet. And when he's talking, when he's explaining like his history there, he's like, I've even seen somebody killed here. And it's like, maybe don't say that to the brand new owners. Like, maybe it's okay to have thoughts, but they don't need to come out your mouth. Mm-hmm. Keep it to yourself. Well, they offered him the job. And Carl, he seemed really excited to be back in the building. He really did seem to truly love the building itself and love his job and love what he did. Well, one day they're all working together and Carl would tell Janet, don't worry about the ghost. They're my friends. And she's kind of like side-eyeing him like, what the hell? what you mean? She's like freaking out and she's like, well, he's kind of a little odd. He's a little strange, but he's friendly. He's nice. Like, we'll just act like that didn't happen. That was until a few days later, Janet would be working in the building and she hears the arguing in the kitchen again, very similar to the first time. She walks to the kitchen. No one's in there. But she then starts hearing a weird noise coming from the sink. So she walks over to the kitchen sink and it starts bubbling this liquid up that looks like blood, which reminds me of the It scene. That terrified me as a child. That's all I can picture.
Yeah.
So, of course, she freaks out. She screams and she's trying to back up from it. But she said as she started moving back, she felt this large hand like pushing her towards the sink. And the harder she pushed back, the harder the presence would push her towards the sink. And she's kind of screaming. And so Carl comes running. And as soon as Carl walks in the door, it stops. It's gone. So the two of them go tell Bobby, like, hey, this just happened to your pregnant wife. And Bobby's like, eh, there's a perfectly good explanation. There's no ghost here.
Yeah, I had a wife that did some crazy stuff when she was pregnant, too.
Were you married before me? Because I know wasn't me.
No, I'm literally talking about you.
Oh, like what?
Girl.
I didn't see blood coming out of the sink.
You've seen a weird baby crawling on the ceiling once.
First of all, I was dreaming. And we know
like the scorpion spider thing.
Yeah.
Second of all, I was dreaming again.
Mm-hmm. How you know she wasn't dreaming?
What about the? Never mind. I'm not going to tell myself.
She's probably tired.
She probably is.
And you know what? Ironically, she's probably like 4 months pregnant too, ain't she?
Yeah.
We're getting there. Which I do see what you're saying. Not that I'm admitting to being crazy, but you know, when I was pregnant, shut up. When I was pregnant with May, I was literally 9 months pregnant and we moved and I was freaking exhausted. And I do sleepwalk very bad. And when I'm stressed and overly tired, my sleepwalking gets worse. Much worse.
Much worse.
And we didn't even have our bed set up in the bedroom yet. So we put our mattress in the living room. And we didn't even have Addie's room set up. And so we were all just sleeping on a mattress in the living room. And again, I'm 9 months pregnant. And I seen this homeless guy in our living room grab our child. So I sit up and start swinging. And Josh wakes up and is like, what are you doing? I was like, did you see that homeless man?
Mind you, she left out the fact that some of those punches hit me.
So I do understand the pregnancy hormones can cause some weird things. But we're moving on.
Hey, ghostly gang. The case is cold and the vibes are haunted.
We've got murder notes, EMF spikes, and no business being awake this late.
But thanks to W Energy Drink, We have clean energy with no crash, so we can hyperfixate on timelines, suspects, and whether or not the attic is haunted or a squirrel is hiding his nuts.
The flavors are criminally good. Like, we destroyed the evidence good. Not a drop could be found.
It's zero sugar, no artificial colors, and delivers terrifying levels of focus and mental clarity. Perfect for connecting red string and angering spirits.
Hit dubby.gg.com.
Use promo code GGP for 10% off.
Dubby, fueling guilty in the ghostly while the killer's still out there.
And the house is still haunted.
So he's like, you're crazy. Nothing happened. There's a perfectly good explanation. A few nights later, there was a patrol officer. So now we have a cop named Hornsby. And he was driving around just doing his job, just a local patrol, you know, checking things out. He knew somebody just bought the building. He was just kind of making sure everything was good. He pulled into the parking lot of the closed bar and he seen movement. And he would call for backup because he knew it was closed and nobody was supposed to be in there. Once the backup gets there, they enter the building. It's completely dark and they don't see anything. They're kind of thinking, were we seeing something? Like, are we crazy? There's nothing in here. And just when they're about to walk out and call it in and say, you know, all's clear, they start hearing a noise coming from the back of the bar by the stage, I believe. And they said it sounded like a man and woman talking with a radio playing. They walk over there to investigate. And as soon as they get to where they thought the sound was coming from, it stops. And then the front door slams shut. So they're thinking, okay, somebody broke in here. We scared them off and they left. So they called it in, told them what happened, and they went on. Thought it was weird, couldn't really explain it, kind of left them scratching their heads. They didn't, kind of wondered, you know, did somebody really come in here? Were we hearing things? They know the history of the place. A few weeks later, there was a car wreck that happened right there in front of the bar, like basically in the parking lot. And this same police officer happened to respond. They ended up removing the guy from the car to offer medical help to him. He would end up passing away while they were doing that on the ground. So they're waiting for the first responders to get there. And Hornsby's like, I'm going to go see if I have a sheet or something in my car to cover him up for his decency and everything. And while he's looking in his car, he said that a lady walks towards him. She came from the direction of the bar and handed him what looked like a tablecloth to cover the body. And he's like, oh, thanks. And so he goes and starts doing what he needs to do. Well, once they clean up the scene, Hornsby is like, I need to go thank that lady for bringing me this sheet. And when he tries to go to the bar, doors are locked, lights are off, nobody's anywhere to be seen. So he's like, okay, something's going on. Something's weird. A few months later, on July 8th, 1978, a fire would happen. It caused about $2,000 in damages to the club, but the firefighters were able to put it out before it overtook the whole building. Mm-hmm. It was never determined what caused the fire. They said it was from an unexplained origin in the older part of the building. And they were never able to determine what caused the fire. Of course, this would push back the opening by a few weeks, maybe even a couple of months, until they could get everything repaired. And on top of that, he also, when this happened, realized there was some faulty... I don't know if it was wiring or if it was the pipes or whatever, but with the sprinkler system, something was broke. And they said, you have to get that fixed before you open your bar. Okay, no problem. We'll get it fixed. Well, now we're going to fast forward to August. Janet was on the second floor. She was kind of sweeping up an office, cleaning it up. She kind of sweeps it backwards and she's on the landing of the stairs. And she said, suddenly... she feels a hand grab her arm, and she said it startled her, and she kind of screamed, And then it pushed her. And she started falling towards the stairs. And then she felt another push that actually made her fall down a whole flight of stairs while she's 6 months pregnant.
Oh, wow.
She said that once she landed, she happened to glance up towards the top where she was, and she seen this shadow of a man standing at the top of the stairs, and he just disappeared. He just started vanishing and went away. It was the fall was bad enough. They ended up taking her to the emergency room, and she would have to be induced and have the baby at 6 months pregnant.
Wow.
The baby would survive. They had, she would give birth to a 1 pound, 15 ounce little girl.
Holy crap.
Of course, tiny, that would be like,
yeah,
in the palm of your hand.
It'd be like when we got Hazel.
Yeah. Even smaller.
Yeah.
So baby did survive. She ended up being okay. She had to stay in the hospital for a long time. But at this point, Janet's like, I'm not going back. That's the last straw for me. I'm done. I could imagine I would not go back. I also seen on another, I can't remember if it was BuzzFeed. I watched a couple of different videos, or it may have been Sam and Colby, but there was another one where kind of the same thing happened to Carl. He was shoved, and when he was shoved, they had these cactuses as decor, but they were real cactuses. And when he was shoved into the cactus and had like the spines all over in his body. I seen another one where Carl, I think he was, I don't know if he was asleep. I think he may have been sleeping, and he woke up and he had spiders all over his body, and he was freaking out, trying to get him off of it. Got so bad that he ran out the door and jumped in the river because he couldn't get the spiders off of him. And when he came back up out of the river, there were no spiders anywhere. So, messing with ya.
That's crazy.
Well, Carl, he would start talking to Bobby and trying to convince him something needs to be done. This is not just affecting her. It's affecting me. It's affecting, like, there's a lot going on. And Bobby's like, I really don't want the reputation of the bar being haunted. I haven't experienced anything, so we're just going to keep trucking. We're going to keep going. He really wanted to get the bar open, and he's like, I don't need anything else delaying the opening of this bar. So finally, on October 27th, 1978, the grand opening would finally happen. But in December, they were forced to close because they never fixed the faulty sprinkler system.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he got that fixed, and Bobby's determined. He's like, we're going to get it fixed. We're going to reopen. And they were able to get it all done. He got it fixed. They were able to reopen. So everybody started coming to the bar. It was getting good reviews. Things were looking up. But customers started experiencing things. One experience that continues to come up is when you go to the bathroom, a trash can will be thrown at you. Or people like just show up in the mirror. Or a lot of footsteps, a lot of noises, a lot of talking, scratches. Like a lot of stuff was happening. There was one time that it was said there was this customer that was kind of making fun of Carl. Like, oh yeah, you and your little ghost friends. And they were known to have a mechanical bull at this bar. And this customer was on the mechanical bull while he was making fun of Carl. And all of a sudden, the mechanical bull started going crazy and like turned all the way up, and the customer started freaking out, like, turn it down, turn it down. And Carl's trying to turn it down, and it wouldn't turn off.
Oh, wow.
So there's that for you. Well, one day there was a gentleman by the name Johnny France, and he was in the bar doing repairs because, again, this is a really old building, so they're constantly having to do repairs. And he said suddenly an entire row of chairs started falling over one by one, almost as if somebody was walking down an aisle and just knocking it down one by one. And Carl said he had a similar experience to that as well. And as this is going on, Carl almost seems to become obsessed with the haunting. He's constantly talking to the ghost. He's talking to who he thinks is Johanna. He's talking to some other ghost. Like that, and it really seems to, all the activity seems to gravitate towards Carl. Well, for, I can't remember. Again, there's a couple of different sources, but one day Carl found a loose floorboard and he pried it up. And in that floorboard, he found the diary of Johanna.
No way.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And that is when he realized that she was one of the ghosts that he was talking to. And Carl even lived in an apartment upstairs, had its own little apartment. And he, that's where he lived for like decades, they said. He lived up there for a long time. And a few nights after he found this diary, he woke up in the middle of the night and he couldn't breathe. It was like something was sitting on his chest and he could not breathe. And he said he finally sat up and it was like he could finally, he just like gasped for air and was able to breathe. But as soon as he did that, all the lights in the building went out. So now he has to walk downstairs. He's got to go to the basement, check the breaker. So he's going downstairs, he's checking the breaker, but while he's down there, he notices a hatch, and when he opened it, he realized that's the well. And when he opened it, he said he suddenly felt an evil presence fill the air, and he's like, deuces, I'm out, and ran out the building.
Wow.
But ever since then, after he opened it, Carl never acted the same. I also seen where downstairs, like there's like tunnels underneath there that the mobsters would take, what they call it, cement barrels and dispose of them in the river. And a lot of people are like, yeah, they're getting rid of dead bodies. The mobsters were, they had a cell in the basement to where if you didn't pay your debts, they would keep you in this basically jail cell of this basement. There, obviously there's got to be some kind of energy there with all of this going on.
Yeah, seriously.
I don't know if I believe all of this, but there's got to be something. Got to be something.
There's a lot of bad stuff going on around that place.
Yeah. Well, after that, Carl, he started acting kind of erratic. He would have sudden mood swings. Like one minute he'd be fine, he'd be talking, and then a light switch would happen and he would just be pissed off and yelling at everybody. And that was not like Carl. Like he was known to be the good old guy that, you know, friendly to everybody. And it just was not normal. To the point where Bobby even would later say he never knew which Carl he would get when he would go to talk to him. And he kind of would tread lightly because he never knew what mood he would be in. Let's see here. Carl began wondering if he was maybe being possessed by Pearl Bryan's murderers. He also wondered if they were the ones that pushed Janet down the stairs. He was scared, but he also had built such a close relationship with the Mackeys, and he put so much love and time into the building that he's like, I couldn't leave. Like, I couldn't just leave. And he kind of grew an attachment to some of the ghosts because they were friendly. But there were these other ghosts that were doing all these very aggressive, evil things. Finally, after all this is going on, Bobby's like, okay, we're going to call reinforcements. Obviously, something's going on. It's not just affecting Janet, who won't even set foot in the building at this point. It's not just affecting Carl, but it's also affecting the patrons. Is that right? Patrons of the bar. And so there was a lot of, they called this person and this person and this person, and they finally found this reverend, and they brought this reverend in. And he's like, yeah, this place is evil. We need to do an exorcism on Carl, on the building, on all of it, just holy water, everything. So they brought him in. And again, there's several different sources, but from the source that I seen, at first, Carl didn't even want to do it. He's like, What about Johanna, though? If we do this exorcism, she's going to go away. And I don't want her to go away. And there was another one that was like, I don't want him to go away. Like, I want the bad to go, but I don't want these ones to go. And they're like, Carl, they need to be at peace, too. Like, you got to let them go. We've got to do it. And so they did, in which Sam and Colby had video of this exorcism that takes place. And he's kind of like, they're doing the ritual. They're praying over him. He's, of course, like normal exorcism movies, you know, flipping around, talking in voices, escalating. They even brought a news reporter in to kind of like document all of it and everything. And suddenly they've been doing it for a few hours, and then suddenly he like goes limp, and they go to check on him, and he's almost like he's very calm, and it was like, it's all better now, they're gone. And the news person was like, well, that was anticlimactic, that was kind of boring. So they're kind of walking out like, what the hell, he just wasted our time. But the reverend's like, no, this isn't over, there's more. So another exorcism takes place, and this happened, I think they said like 6 hours that they did this exorcism on Carl. Now this is where where the story kind of takes a weird turn. So most of the sources, that's basically where it ends. They did the exorcism, they said it was successful, news reporter and everybody left. However, I listened to Morbid, and they did a deep dive. And I will say, those girls know their shit. They find some details. They found some sources that said they had to do another exorcism like weeks later. And they're, of course, same thing, doing the rituals, praying with Carl, going over all of it. And during the exorcism... It's not funny, but they're doing the exorcism and they notice like his pants start becoming covered in blood. And so they go to check Carl, and he suddenly acquired very bad hemorrhoids, and they seem to be growing as they were doing the ritual.
Good God.
And so at that point, Carl was like, leave me alone. I'll make them leave. If you don't put me through pain anymore, I'll make them leave, yada, yada, yada. And so that was another source. I don't know how factual that is. I didn't see that anywhere else. I just heard it on Morbid, but it was just kind of weird.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. You got ghosts so bad, you get hemorrhoids. Like, no, thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. So from what I understand, eventually the exorcism takes place. Everything's good, but it's still haunted. I guess the evil part kind of died down. So I'm going to kind of fast forward to more current times. So a customer at the bar would end up suing Bobby Mackey for emotional damages because they were attacked by a spirit in the bathroom.
Wow.
Yes.
Successfully?
So it went to court, but they ended up throwing it out. They're like, how can you prove this? Like, what are you talking about? And I did, again, Morbid was talking about it, and his like defense attorney came up with like this hilarious poem. It was very poetic, but it was so funny. And it was basically like, you're an idiot. How can you say a ghost attacked you or whatever? And it was hilarious. Well, because of this, they ended up putting a sign in the bar. I'm looking for what it says now. Give me just 2 seconds. Oh, there it is. They put a sign in the bar. The guy was suing him for $1,000 in emotional damages. He said that he went into the bathroom, was attacked by a dark-haired man with a rope around his neck. The ghost would punch and kick him before suddenly vanishing. Those were his claims. But Bobby Mackey ended up putting a sign that said, warning to our patrons, this establishment is perpetrated to be hunt to be haunted. Management is not responsible and cannot be held liable for any actions of any ghosts or spirits on this premises. So I thought that was kind of funny. Another, of course, this place has been featured on all kinds of different shows. Ghost Adventures, Ghost Adventure Aftershock, Paranormal Lockdown, A Haunting, Is It Real? Most Terrifying Places on Earth, BuzzFeed Unsolved, which is the one that I watched. But here's the one that I was just kind of like, huh, I wouldn't expect that. They were on the Jerry Springer Show.
I see. I can see that happen. Yeah, that's right, I totally can.
Bobby Mackey, his wife Janet, and the club's caretaker appeared back in 1991 on Jerry Springer.
Wow.
So very strange. So
I've probably seen that on TV as a kid.
Probably just don't even remember.
There was a lot of weird stuff on Jerry Springer back then.
For sure. Well, I also watched the Sam and Colby episode, and what's weird is, like, as soon as they got to the establishment, the guy's kind of giving them a tour, and they were experiencing stuff, but as soon as they got there, all the pipes in the building started busting and, like, pouring water everywhere. And, of course, they're like, oh, is it because they're telling us to get out? But that was actually one of the last investigative teams that were allowed to go to the place, because they would end up closing that building and demolishing it late 2024, and they opened a new location because the building was it just wasn't structurally sound anymore. It was just becoming too costly to renovate it, and so they ended up shutting it down and demolishing it and opening it somewhere else. So that is Bobby Mackey's Music Hall.
That's crazy.
Crazy. That's a lot going on in one building with all the stuff that happened before with Pearl Bryan and Johanna and
the mob.
The mob.
Devil worshippers.
With that much history, I almost kind of wonder if, you know, even with them demolishing the building, I wonder if, like, the fans would carry the history.
And I mean, they've already destroyed one building and built on it, and it was already that haunted, because remember, the original slaughterhouse was torn down. This was a new building built on that location, and it just had the basement as the original structure.
Yeah, there's a lot of trauma on the land itself, and not necessarily that's tied to just a structure.
So it would have been a cool place to visit for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking that. You said it was closed.
It's
demolished.
Gone. It's gone.
Ruined all my plans.
I know. Well, speaking of plans, I'll have to bleep this out or I'll edit it all together. Pretty soon, I'm going to start researching for. And once it warms up a little bit, we are going to go ghost hunt out there. So we'll have to do it on a night that you don't have Hadley.
Allegedly.
So.
You can only be out there for so many hours.
Well, remember, I found that other information, so.
I don't remember what happened.
It's not a private state monument.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Or it's not a state monument. It's a private owned. Whatever.
Doesn't mean we can't get prosecuted.
Oh, we could, but we'll just be like, oh, we're just ghost hunting. It's okay. So, yeah, that's Bobby Mackey's. Had a little bit of everything for you.
That was pretty good. A lot of murder.
Yeah, that's what, like I said, I wasn't expecting that much murder, but it was kind of cool because it had a little bit of true crime, a little bit of history, a little bit of ghost, and very interesting.
Yeah, it was definitely, I wouldn't say a cool story by any means, but because that's not the right word.
Interesting
works.
Yep.
But it's definitely
intriguing.
Yeah, I think intriguing is a much better word for that.
Yeah, for sure. So there we go. Are you gonna bring us another story one of these times?
Maybe. I'm having a hard time just getting out there and recording episodes.
I know. But hopefully this makes it easier. Now that we know it'll work and it works better on the computer, maybe this will make it better. We do have a guest appearance. I'll have to look at the dates again, but I'm going to be covering an killer, and then for our episode that they're going to be on with us. So if you want to join, then you can. And then we're going to be on their show, and we're going to be talking about the movie that is based off of.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So I'll send you the dates. That way you've got it. So.
Okay.
Yep. Well, that's all I've got. Nothing else. You guys got anything you want to add?
I don't think so.
No more. All right. Well, I guess that's it for this week. Josh and I are going out of town this weekend. We'll be back Sunday. We'll record another episode next week. I think I've already got that one done. We actually had a listener suggestion. Oh, that does remind me. So I have two listener suggestions. So I think the next two stories I'm doing is coming from that person, which is the two that I told you about.
Okay.
And then we got a message from an old friend.
And a model.
Huh?
He said he's not old.
Oh. We got a message from one of our friends about a haunting in the house that they live in now. So what I'm trying to get a few more personal accounts. That way I can kind of share a few in one episode. So if you have any paranormal stories, aliens, Bigfoot, true crime adjacent, anything, send it to our email at theguiltyandtheghostlypodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, all of it's Guilty and the Ghostly. And follow, like, subscribe, rate the show. Like I said, our numbers have grown a lot this week. I was very surprised.
Yep, same.
They've almost doubled. So I appreciate it. I don't know where you guys are coming from, but keep coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. So, yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
All right.
Well, until next week, stay spooky.
We'll catch you later. It's your turn to say something.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
yeah, no problem.